everybody, and welcome to another episode of Mental Health Matters, the podcast of St. Louis Counseling. If you're interested in our services, check us out at stlouiscounseling.org. Or if you want to listen to any other of our podcasts, they are there. So go to our website, stlouiscounseling.org, spell out Saint, and you will see those. Also, please share the podcast, download it. Do whatever it is you can do to promote this podcast, because ultimately this podcast is about breaking down stigma to mental health, making mental health okay to talk around the dinner table about on a daily basis. So that's our goal. As always, well, let me also say this. If you want to sponsor the podcast, feel free to reach out to us and help us help everyone in the community. So if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, go to ddugan@ccstl.org. That is email Debbie Dugan, ddugan@ccstl.org. You can find her on the website. So today we have a very interesting podcast. It's a podcast about our psyche. It's a podcast about some things that we probably do on a daily basis. Forgiveness. Hopefully we do on a daily basis, because there's a lot to forgive out in our world today. And you know, we're going to bring in two individuals to talk about that, to really kind of dive into what is forgiveness. So today, I'm excited to say that we have Sister Virginia Herbers and Father Chris Collins. How are you guys?
Great. Thanks.
We are doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. We are excited to have some conversation. And I guess first, you know, Father Chris, you're the assistant to the president of Mission and Integrity and Identity. Assistant
Hopefully
to the president.
Hopefully that's part of it, too.
Yeah, exactly. It was all implied, right? Over at St. Louis University, right?
That's correct. Work with faculty and staff, especially.
Excellent. And sister, not only are you an author, you have a book that just came out, correct?
Booklet, yeah.
A booklet, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, booklet. It's kind of the same thing in my world. It's still reading, right? But that's called Forgiveness, Choosing to Receive and Give.
That's correct.
All right. And in your other spare time, right, you are the director of spiritual formation at St. Louis University.
That's right. Also working with faculty and staff.
So you guys get to work together.
Exactly.
So what does that mean? So mission and identity at St. Louis University. Like, what does that mean? Let's maybe start with that first.
Well, SLU is a Catholic and Jesuit university, so there's a particular office within the president's area, his office, that focuses on trying to pass on what's unique about a Catholic or Jesuit university within the landscape of regular universities. What's the spirituality that kind of undergirds it, and how do we go about our business maybe in a unique way that's sort of mission-driven with a spiritual and religious purpose behind it, even though there's all sorts of different people that work at the place that have different faith backgrounds, but still there's a kind of an originating impulse there that's unique. So
okay.
We try to pass that on to folks that are working there.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, as with your students as well, not everybody is Catholic that's there, right? But
correct.
Why is there a Catholic university, and what that can do for everyone, really?
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know, and so then for you, sister, I mean, some of the work you're doing with faculty, right? Mm-hmm. Like what would that look like? How would you be integrating mission, helping them understand mission into their work lives, into what they're doing?
So I have to admit, I'm new to the position. Mm-hmm. So it's been, the first few months have been just getting to know the faculty and staff. And
relationship is always important, right?
Relationship, yeah. Building that relationship to understand, you know, what are their experiences, first of all, the context, their background, and then what needs might they have in the spiritual realm that our office can provide, whether it's experiences, whether it's readings, whether it's just deeper relationship as a community or with God.
Well, you know, and we talk about that and the whole person, right, and the spiritual component to the whole person.
Right.
And no matter what you believe, right, there, it's a spiritual
right.
side to us. And that's why, you know, I think you guys are going to be great with talking about forgiveness, right? Because that is such a multi-layered word that means so many different things. And yes, there's probably a technical way we could teach forgiveness, right? But really, like, where does that come from, and where is it at? And it's stuff that I really do think on a daily basis, we're forgiving, well, hopefully we're forgiving a lot, but we're presented with the opportunity to practice forgiveness and to give give forgiveness, you know. So, yeah.
No, it's interesting. Even just as you mentioned that, even within SLU, the Human Resources Department invited me in a year or two ago to talk about, you know, and we can talk about it from a Christian perspective, Catholic perspective, like how important forgiveness is, but in the workplace specifically, all the different little or bigger things that people do to get on each other's nerves and hurt each other, and that can fester if we're not working on getting these relationships restored. And that's also bad for business, you know, if and the just the efficiency even, or the fulfilling the mission of any organization. So it's interesting the how on a very daily basis, even in the workplace, maybe there's a particular role that we could be attentive to. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, because the festering creates a culture, and the culture can either be a positive or negative or neutral, you know, ambivalent. But that ability to forgive or not forgive or just engage in ways that are healthy creates a whole fabric that determines the whole thing.
So then when you, okay, so we're presented an opportunity, right? And then we feel we have to, we feel maybe we should forgive somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Or something happens, there's a disagreement, or our feelings are hurt, you know, if we get it down really simple. And then so they're hurt because somebody did something to us that was in conflict to what we were hoping, you know, to gain, whatever. So when that hits you, right? Like what's that kind of that process of forgiveness? Like what, talk a little bit about that.
Okay, I'll start with a silly example.
I love those.
So even just driving to work this morning, you know, you're going, you see the light's green, I'm gonna make that turn. And as you're approaching the intersection, somebody cuts you off and they hit the green and you get the red. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's that immediate sense, for me, it was that immediate sense of, oh, why did you do that? And did you have to be that way?
Uh-huh.
You know, one of us, I was here first, basically that sense of,
yeah,
this was my right or within my realm of what should be happening. Mm-hmm. And you came in and interrupted it in a way that you shouldn't have done. And then there you go. So, I mean, it is a silly example of, how do you get past that anger, that frustration, that injustice?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so as I was thinking about that, just walking to the office, I think the first thing for me is to acknowledge, okay, maybe that should or shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. So there it is. You can't backtrack it. You can't pull the person out of their car, track them down, drag them out and say, you know, that was a jerky thing to do. So I have to, first of all, deal with it in myself. All right, so there is no relationship, and yet I can identify what just happened might not have been the way I wanted it to go. I can assign a positive, a negative, or a neutral motivation to why you did what you just did. Mm-hmm. My instinct is to assign the negative because you're a jerk.
Uh-huh.
It might be neutral, mm-hmm. or it could be positive. You know, he or she needed to get where they were going more expediently than I did. It doesn't change the fact of what happened, but I can identify that the there's a person who did that behavior, and then I can choose how I want to interact with that person, even if I don't know them. You know, mm-hmm. so it's a silly little example, but I think when we translate that into relationships that actually do have meaning for us, we can look at what happened and assign a positive, neutral, negative motivation to it, and then make a determination about the relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's all kind of theoretical, but...
No, I think that's a great example. And, you know, the way that starts, as you said, is my dignity has been violated, sort of.
Yeah.
So there's something unfair that happened. And if I'm especially having a bad day or if I'm tired or something, I have a strong reaction. Mm-hmm. And maybe oftentimes too strong. So it's also mm-hmm. good for me at some point to, after a little bit of cooling down period, to say, why am I getting so worked up about what's really, in this case, not a very big deal. Forget about the jerk and how they should have acted
right.
better. Yeah. Like, what's going on in me?
Right.
That's to me, that's much more fruitful energy spent to quit thinking about the jerk and playing out scenarios about the next time that this happens. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And it's all just fantasy land. You know? Mm-hmm. But instead, what I could do is kind of turn the tables to examine myself. What's going on? Why was I so irritated? What's going on in my own heart here, my own sense of myself, that something's off there. Something needs attention in me. Mm-hmm. And if I was a little bit, you know, say more healed or strengthened in my own sense of self, these things would not really bother me. Mm-hmm. So what's going on in me? And what's the attention or care or truer sense of myself that needs attention, rather than spending all my energy looking outward about how everybody else should be changing, and they never will.
That is an awesome point. You know, it reminds me, when I was teaching eighth grade math once, it was a class that I had real big discipline problems with. Mm-hmm. I had very little experience, and so these junior high kids were walking all over me. And I would go home, and I would just be at my wit's end from having tried to be so patient and positive in the classroom. And one day, after weeks of this, it was just a normal math class, and one of the kids had his pencil, and he flipped it, purposely or accidentally, doesn't even matter, but it went over, and everybody started laughing. And my response to this kid was so completely out of proportion.
I just
went off the deep end on him. And he was sitting there looking at me like, okay, I will never pick up a pencil again. And I realized exactly what you're just saying. It had nothing, very little to do with the presenting cause. And it had almost everything to do with my sense of what had been going on for long term with those kids.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, just to run with that a little bit, I think there's probably, and I've got plenty of examples of that myself too. Mm-hmm. Also in teaching, a lot of stuff comes to the surface in the classroom.
Poor teachers.
And going over the top on this anger that I have or flashes, which probably in hindsight had a lot more to do with me, especially as a newer teacher.
Right.
It was like, I want to be doing a good job and I am failing, and therefore I'm probably a crummy teacher, and they're probably going to fire me, or I'm a fraud. There's a lot of that stuff going on in the background, which is why I'm like flashing that sort of frustration, anger, but it's really more about my nervousness about my sense of self in a way, you know? And so that's a lot better energy spent confronting those sorts of realities about, no, I'm okay. Like,
so a major starting point is knowing yourself and taking that time to self-reflect when it comes to forgiveness, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Because it does wonders for us. So, yeah, I mean, the act of forgiveness, yes, the other person, if you have the opportunity to forgive the other person, you know, sometimes like the example of the car, you're never, like you said, you're not going to find that person. Mm-hmm. If you are chasing somebody, you probably need to stop and not do that. But if you know the person, you know, they get something from that. But also forgiveness is about what it does for you and your ability, you know, because so often I think it's like, okay, I need to forgive that person because I want them to understand I'm okay with what happened. Mm-hmm. But what that, I think sometimes we forget about what it does for us.
Right. It relieves so much tension. I mean, that's the whole thing that we, you know, that I forget how that phrase goes or something, but when we are, if I've been hurt by somebody else, and then I really deliberately choose to remain angry and withhold my forgiveness from this other person, there's something crazy going on in our own minds, thinking I'm really punishing this person by not forgiving them, by withholding my mercy or withholding my forgiveness, when in fact the other person is just oblivious to it. And all I'm doing is making myself more toxic and bitter, and even though I was the one wronged in the first place, I'm really genuinely only continuing to hurt myself by holding that resentment. Mm-hmm. And it's not punishing the other person at all. Right. It's only punishing myself. And you know, that's common sense stuff, but it's hard to get out of that mode and practice something different, you know.
I think the expression you're making me think of is taking arsenic and waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah, that's it. Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And what it does to us. Okay, so why do you think people, let me ask you this, right? Turn the other cheek, right? So you often hear like, I'm not turning the other cheek because they're just going to hit that one too.
Right.
You know? So how do you work someone through that process to help them understand, you know, what it does for all parties, right?
Yeah. So obviously you figured out that I'm a story person, right? So I've got a story for this. there is this, it's a Sufi proverb or a Sufi parable that says there was this man who was sitting along the banks of the Ganges River, let's say, and there had been lots of storms, and so the river was very swollen, and he noticed that a tree had been almost completely uprooted, and its branches were dangling inside the river, and there was a scorpion going out on one of the branches, and it was trying to get to safety because it was in danger of being washed away. So this man climbs out onto the branches of these trees to rescue this scorpion. And as he reaches for it, it stings him. And so he pulls back and he extracts the poison, you know, like he's sucking on the poison to get it out and spits it out. And then he goes back and he reaches for it again and it stings him. Mm-hmm. And he pulls back, extracts the poison, goes for a third time, gets to the scorpion and knocks it into a place of safety so it scurries away. And he climbs off the tree and there's somebody else waiting on the banks of the river and who was watching him and says, "What the heck was that all about? Now, you know that thing was going to hurt you. Why did you continue to try to save it?" And his answer was, "It's the nature of the scorpion to sting. It's my nature to help. Why would I allow its nature to affect or change my own?" Mm. And I think that's a real easy story to tell, mm-hmm. but in the end, turning the other cheek isn't about giving another person opportunity to do more violence to you. It's about, I want to be a forgiving person. I want to be a person that sees the best and hopes for something better. And therefore, I can receive what you just gave me, recognize that it might not be who you are, and be a forgiving person myself so that I decide you're worth a second chance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Easy to say, yes. Not so hard, not so easy to live.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a tough
go
one.
Ahead.
I'm a little speechless at the moment. That's a tough one. Super well put, though.
Oh, well, you know, and it's about the nature of who you are then. I mean, I think when you said, like, okay, I'm not going to let the scorpion's nature, you know, to hurt or whatever it was,
to do harm,
right? I'm not going to let that control my nature. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, even when we talked earlier about, you know, holding in, you know, taking all the arsenic, right? It's the same thing. It's like, don't let that. And I think, you know, when we look at our communities today, right? Just look at St. Louis, right? There's a lot of forgiveness that needs to happen. I mean, just with the shootings, the people that are even secondary, thirdly away, removed from those shootings, you know, and people are mad. People are upset about what's going on. These kids, you know, if you just look at just the amount of kids that were shot this summer, right? And many of the deaths. There's like so much forgiveness that needs to occur, and it does start at the individual, but then as a community, we have a lot to work on too.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get to that. And I think some of this discussion about, you know, what's your nature? Who are you? You know, what's your psyche?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely a fine line between, you know, being a doormat where I'm just constantly opening myself up to being, you know, abused on one level or another in a unhealthy way. But there's a healthy way to engage and show up in situations that are hard. And sometimes you've got to, if there's anger there or resentment for any number of different reasons, whether it's within a family situation or civically even. This plays out, as you say, big time for a whole urban area within St. Louis, you know, saying, well, those people who live there ought to act differently. And then, well, as long as you're standing at a distance from all that,
right,
things only get worse, right? Mm-hmm. Not only for other people, but it's also getting worse for everybody if we're not addressing where there's pain and need for forgiveness. But it's very difficult to show up in tough situations and take it in a healthy way. Something like taking anger and resentment in and giving back love, basically. I mean, and this is from a Christian perspective, this is the heart of the whole deal, right? This is how we get redeemed, right? I mean, in God's self, God takes on the resentment and hostility and violence and then produces back, gives back love. You know, I was thinking of one little story for me. I was a pastor on a reservation, Indian reservation in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Wow. And I was pastor of Wounded Knee, a little place where there's lots of trauma, historical trauma. And I remember going to visit, bringing communion to an older gentleman. And then when I came out of that house in this projects area, very poor and very violent little township sort of, this other guy that I never met before calls me over, and I'm a priest, I'm dressed like a priest, and he comes over and he starts, total stranger, he just starts laying into me about what he thinks about the church and white people and, you know, you name
it.
You
got all of it, yeah.
And at least for that experience, I was able, in that moment, I just happened to be able to just listen, you know, and to basically just take it and not get defensive or storm away or argue back. It just, he needed to vent, you know, and understandably so, right? Even if some of it was not fair on a rational level, he just was venting. And he, for a moment at least, there was somebody that could just take it. And then we started to have a pretty nice conversation after that, you know? And it was just, but so that's just happening in the human condition all the time among all of us, right? Sometimes it shouldn't be fair that somebody has to unload or lay into me about something. Sometimes it's important to just be quiet and listen and take it and know that this person's coming from a place of pain. Mm-hmm. And maybe after some time, as hard as that is, maybe then I can both help myself and help the other person by trying to respond in love, basically, or you know, care for the other person. But that's messy.
Yep.
That plays out on individual levels, but also plays out on communal or civic levels, family systems for sure, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we got to just take it a little bit, and then it can get redeemed, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's reminding me of the expression that hurt people hurt people. And if I am being hurt and I can see, especially in that example you just used, like he didn't know you from Adam. So clearly it wasn't personal. And there was pain behind the interaction. And that was, the pain was what initiated the relationship, kind of. And allowed you to be in a position that didn't take offense at it because it wasn't personal. Mm-hmm. And that might be oversimplifying or generalizing.
No, that's exactly right.
But I think to recognize for the experiences, whether it's in my personal life or my professional life or my civic life, that when there is an infliction of pain in the relationship, it might be about me personally. It might be because I need to do something different or I didn't respect someone or recognize the dignity that was there. And it could also be that that person is dealing with their own pain. Mm-hmm. And it's out of that 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 relationship is being engaged. So I think there's a both and there to be able to recognize, okay, I need to do my own homework and say, have I behaved or acted or judged or spoken or done something in a realm that was offensive? And then there's also a time of reflection to say, wow, how much of this is not about me? And can I recognize that the other person, the other party, the other organization, whatever, might be acting out of a platform of pain or suffering or history? And just recognizing that. I think there's value too.
And I think, you know, a quick little thing on that too makes me think of, I mean, mostly we've been talking so far about the challenges of giving forgiveness. And how important it is to have a sense of self in order to be able to do that. But also, I think we can get better at giving forgiveness if we're also accustomed to being on the other side of the equation and and admitting when, and asking forgiveness when I have messed something up or I have hurt somebody. If I can be quicker to have the sort of courage, both humility and courage, to be asking forgiveness on a regular basis and knowing full well that I am a selfish, ungrateful person a lot and do dumb things and hurtful things. If I'm aware of that on a regular basis, I'm going to be actually more probably compassionate toward other people too. So it's not like I have to be this perfect self in order to be giving, you know, deigning to give forgiveness to other people. It actually works by practicing the sense of humility and examination of myself, like, and admitting when I have messed something up and being quick, or at least as quick as possible, to be humbling myself to ask forgiveness of others. And then maybe I'm going to be a bit more compassionate. I think it works like that. Yep. You know?
How come you think people are slow? Okay, this is a probably a whole different podcast too. This might be an 8-hour podcast. But why? How come you think people are slow to say, "I'm sorry"? Do you forgive me?
Oh, because that makes you vulnerable. Mm-hmm. If I say that, "I'm sorry, will you forgive me?" Mm-hmm. You're waiting for the response, and the hoped for response is yes. Mm-hmm. But there's a very real risk that it could be no. And so I think that type of vulnerability puts power in the hands of the other person. Mm-hmm. And that's a really hard thing. I mean, that is the basis of the Christian message, but I think it's more than the Christian message. I think it's the message of a lot of people of goodwill. You know, Gandhi, this was Gandhi and Martin Luther King. This is their platform too, as well as Jesus. Mm-hmm. That I can stand in a position that makes myself vulnerable to rejection, to betrayal, to abandonment, to silence. Mm-hmm. And that's just a big ask. That's a big ask. And I think that's probably, in my opinion, the biggest reason asking for forgiveness is so hard. Or saying, "I'm sorry, will you forgive me?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because really of that power imbalance is there. Like you say, when the other person, if I admit that I'm in a place of weakness here, or in the wrong, I'm allowing this other person to have a place of power. What is this person going to do with this power?
Right.
Are they going to wipe me out? Are they going to annihilate me and berate me even more? Mm-hmm. Or is there an opportunity to be reconciled here? And that's, you know, of course, this also plays out in very mundane places. In the workplace, of course, all the time. All sorts of different workplaces. You know, how often are we ourselves or colleagues, if something goes wrong or some task didn't get fulfilled, I'm going to blame everybody else and make sure that the spotlight's not on me, because I might get fired
your whole life might change.
The boss might use that against me, or I won't get promoted, or, you know, it's pretty practical stuff too. That's risky to admit something was screwed up. But in fact, of course, I think we also realize in many instances in a workplace or anywhere else, if I do make that admission, that actually communicates a sense of integrity, and
definitely
actually this person becomes more trustworthy.
Yeah.
But that's a gamble. Yeah. It's a risk. Yeah. You know? But it's a scary moment to open myself up to that, not knowing what the response is going to be.
Right.
And if we were burned once, the next time it's like, oh, I'm going to be more guarded. I'm not going to do that. So our past experiences, of course, come into play too.
Right.
Right.
So being vulnerable, from a Christian sense, being vulnerable, it's basically what, you know, we're trying to say, it's okay to be vulnerable, and there's all these factors that do come into play, you know, about your own trust level with this person. Do you have a relationship with this person? But ultimately, you know, allowing yourself to be vulnerable from a spiritual sense is really at such a core issue. But it's like, how do you, I guess maybe it's practice, you know, I don't know.
I think it's practice. And I think it's building a personality that's going to be able to trust. And sometimes that trust can be naive. Like if I'm in the wrong and I am in a relationship with someone who consistently blames me, and yet I've done something that I'm in the wrong for in that relationship, and I say, "I'm sorry, that was my fault." I know, or I can, it would be fair to anticipate that there would be blame coming from the other party. Mm-hmm. So I think being in a position of trust is what allows for either a confession of fault or, you know, just an admission in humility that, I messed this up. I screwed this up. Mm-hmm. But that isn't always a safe place to be. And so the vulnerability is an important thing to acknowledge, but it's also important to acknowledge when that is an appropriate stance to take and when you can be sorry or forgiving or asking for forgiveness, and it puts you in a place that makes you vulnerable to a degree that's not healthy. I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
Sure. And I think that, you know, when you're talking about even from a spiritual or religious perspective, certainly within a Christian perspective, and this is pretty common to both of us here, mm-hmm. sisters and apostle of the Sacred Heart, you know, there's done a lot of examination of that reality. Within the Christian imagination and reality, mm-hmm. redemption doesn't happen until the heart of Christ is pierced, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And to talk about vulnerable, it's woundable. You know, mm-hmm. he is wounded mm-hmm. mortally on the cross, and it's only then that the redemption starts to open up to all of humanity. Even the one who does the killing, even the one who puts the spear through his heart immediately after that, almost immediately after that, is the one who's making a profession of faith, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's something in, you know, in terms of the Christian vision, that's it. Mm-hmm. It all happens right there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And what does that look like playing out in more mundane ways in our human lives? But I think we see echoes of that in normal human existence mm-hmm. all the time, allowing mm-hmm. my heart to be woundable, vulnerable, mm-hmm. and then giving back love, uh-huh. asking Jesus is asking the Father to forgive them, for they don't mm-hmm. know what they're doing, you know, on the cross itself. I mean, if we can do small versions of that, all of these relationships are starting to be redeemed, but that's a crazy pathway. Right?
Yeah.
That's a pathway that doesn't make any sense at all. And yet it's right. The only one that works.
Uh-huh. It's the only one that works. So the fascinating thing, I love that scene from scripture. It's a horrid scene, but I love it because of everything you just kind of pointed out and then some. So that blow of the soldier's spear wasn't even the mortal blow. He was dead already, you know, so we had already done everything you could possibly do to this man. Mm-hmm. And then scripture says, just to be sure, mm-hmm. that lance went right through the heart, just to be sure that you are gone and you're never coming back. Mm-hmm. And in that very action comes out blood and water, which mm-hmm. actually I just learned physiologically is exactly what would have happened. But the symbolic thing to that in the gospel sense is the blood being the overflowing love of Christ, even to those who would do such horrendous things, and the water being a fresh start, you know, that mm-hmm. water of baptism or of rebirth, like let's start again. That is the response even of a dead Christ to mm-hmm. the last blow. Mm-hmm. So there's that, which is everything you just talked about. And then, from the female point of view, there's his mother standing witness to this violence, just yeah. standing there, taking it in and realizing that if this is God's response to it, I will stand witness to that method and not participate in it by either being, you know, violently opposed to it, by meeting hate with hate. I will stand witness to this response of love mm-hmm. to that type of experience. And there's that too.
Talk about forgiveness.
That exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Wow, you guys really kind of broke that down to a spiritual sense. Okay, so when we talk on that level of forgiveness, okay, we kind of broke that down from that very, basic core Christian way of looking at that from the examples you gave from scripture. So then when you equate that to some of the real world issues we come into, when you have a person that's in a relationship that is very abusive, and you know, we kind of alluded to it earlier with discussing, you know, turning the other cheek, but there's boundaries with that as well too, and there's also safety with that. How then do you create an atmosphere with forgiveness, but at the same time have that boundary of safety and the right and wrong and sense of justice?
Right.
Yeah, things make you go,
Right. So when you're talking about a situation of violence, whether that's in a personal relationship or in a society, whatever kind of relationship you want to talk about, I find it helpful to distinguish the violation from the violator. And it's almost impossible to forgive the violation. Violence isn't meant to be legitimated. It isn't meant to be made okay. It isn't meant to be perpetuated. But to take a look at the violator and say, you are more than that. And in order for this relationship to be healthy or to be okay and safe, I need to know that in relationship, the more than that is going to be who I engage with. So I think in a very real way, like if we're talking about an abusive relationship, I do not allow you to continue to treat me that way or behave that way. And I can say that as a person, you are more than how you are treating me. So I need to be able to get myself into a safe place and see you as a person. Mm-hmm. But the behavior has to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has to be confronted. I mean, and, you know, at the very least, if as I am being hurt or wounded or abused on any level, the baseline, I guess, is at the very least, I don't want to give more violence back, at least not more violence, but also not be a doormat, as I was saying before, mm-hmm. too, because that allows the violence to be perpetuated and injustice continue to be done. Mm-hmm. So the injustice of a situation has to be confronted. So when we talk about if I'm being hurt, I will give back love. Love, that's not just squishy language about mm-hmm. I'm going to be really sweet to you. Love includes confronting,
right.
telling the truth, and seeking justice, right? This person might need to be arrested and go to jail. And then maybe once that justice is achieved, then, again, according to the kind of Christian flow of things here and biblical kind of flow of things, justice is essential. And then mercy follows that. But that just because we're called to be merciful doesn't mean we become doormats and don't seek justice, if that means mm-hmm. makes sense. But that's a twofold deal. If there's an egregious injustice or violation happening, right, that has to be stopped and confronted, and the person might need to be punished mm-hmm. So that person can also be redeemed.
Freed.
And freed, ultimately.
Freed.
Get out of this cycle of not only of experiencing unjust violence, but get out of the cycle of
inflicting
unjust violence. So both, each person needs something different there for the kind of redemption to happen.
Right.
If that may, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about, or hard to get language for that.
That's the beauty of the topic,
yeah,
right?
That's why
right.
we're here.
I mean, I think you described that good about love also, because a lot of times people that don't slow down and think about, you know, hear people talking about churches and different religions, like you're supposed to love your neighbor, but all this hurt is going on. But it's like defining what is love. And like you said, it's not just the squishy stuff like, oh, I forgive you, give me a hug, and you know. No, mm-hmm. it's all these different levels of what love is,
right.
accountability and all those things, and justice.
Right.
And I think that's where we have to keep remembering. You know, we hear terms that are out there a lot of times, and we just make one association with it. But until we take the time mm-hmm. to explore what that really means, then you understand better mm-hmm. on a lot of different, deeper levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So what's the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation? Yeah, I'm blowing your mind today. It's almost like I have a little birdie in my ear or something. that just all these thoughts are coming in.
So, you know, the fight or flight behavior. So when there's something fearful that's occurring, if I've got a flight instinct, which I happen to have, that basically gets me to a position of safety. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing, I mean, I don't know enough about this in the realm of psychology to know what fight, what that instinct does, but the flight instinct gets me to a place of safety, get away from the attack. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually envisioning this. So if I'm running away from that experience, then there comes a point when I stop running because I'm in a place of safety. And I think what forgiveness does in my mind is forgiveness helps me reorient myself to the person that was doing that. I don't have to go back and give him a hug, but I have to turn back toward that individual to see the person, mm-hmm. recognize the person. And I honestly think that's kind of a helpful paradigm, or, you know, image for forgiveness, to orient myself back toward that person from a safe place. Mm-hmm. So forgiveness starts with an orientation to the person. And then I have to analyze, is it safe to get myself back closer to that individual? And if I'm getting closer and closer to that person and that attack starts again, then I retreat. Mm-hmm. But forgiveness is just an orientation toward the person. Reconciliation, I think, is when that relationship is repaired and you can come back into healthy relationship in a personal way. But I can forgive from a distance. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be something that, okay, forgiveness means I go back into the situation and just hope for the best. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's fair. I think I can forgive someone who hasn't been able to amend their behavior or hasn't had an experience of being dealt with justly. I mean, there's plenty of abusive situations where the abuser doesn't go to jail. The cops don't. I mean, if it's an emotional or psychological abuse, it's really hard to prove and punish. Mm-hmm. So I think the forgiveness can happen at a distance. Mm-hmm. Reconciliation is the optimal effect of forgiveness.
Yeah, kind of like the end game of it. It's the end state, maybe. Maybe that's one way, as you say, the reconciliation is the final state when things have been put back together. What has been broken, things are put back together. But there's several back and forth steps prior to the reconciliation that needs to happen. And offering forgiveness, the other one asking forgiveness, both things have to be happening in order to get to the place of reconciliation. And maybe it never gets to reconciliation, right. But at least I can be giving the forgiveness, like you say, even from a distance. I mean, I think about it as, I'm a priest, I hear confessions, and I go to confession a lot. So it's interesting. Even in that little ritual, a bunch of things need to happen, right? Mm-hmm. Person needs to show up.
Yeah, number one. Right?
That's hard. Get in there, say, I have sinned. Here's what's happened. Here's what I know I need forgiveness for. You have a back and forth. So they're already, in the Catholic parlance, they already have a contrite heart, genuine contrition. I know I messed up and I'm sorry and I've got no explanations for myself. Right? I'm
no
just
excuses.
Laying myself out there and then waiting for, okay, maybe a little chat about things, but then it comes, the absolution or the forgiveness does come from God. And then there's another thing of, here's a penance that you should do. You've already got the forgiveness, but here's an extra positive act that the priest suggests to the person. Mm-hmm. Say this prayer, do this little action to show more gratitude because I am reconciled now. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of back and forth stuff that goes on just even within that little ritual that can be maybe illuminating for ordinary life too. That's in order to get to the end game of reconciliation, all of that back and forth, the contrition, the admitting, the being honest with oneself before another, ultimately before God in that case, but before another person also, that's hard to do, to lay it all out there. And then once I've laid it all out there, then the forgiveness does come, the mercy does come, and then I want to be able to respond in gratitude with some kind of action or prayer, and to show things are put back together now. I'm in relationship, at the very least with God.
Right. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And oftentimes that penance, in addition to being an act of gratitude, is also an act of reparation.
Yeah.
Like it,
right.
In my experience in the confessional, it's often, okay, that which you just confessed about, that relationship or that broken experience, go back to that person if you can and see if there can be a repairing of that brokenness, a repairing of that relationship. So that reparation part can also be part of that penance, that there is, you know, it's not just about me and God, and God forgives me. There's a need for me to forgive myself. And then there's a need for the relationship to be repaired, whatever that relationship would be.
Yeah. And that, I'm glad you mentioned the forgiving oneself, because that actually is usually the hardest part.
Including coming out
of the confessional all the time, a person, it's that's mysterious why it is the hardest. Forgiveness is forgiving of oneself, you know, even if I know God has done it, if I know this other person, this loved one has done it, how these things continue to linger and keep running through our minds and hearts and going back into history, playing this out, out the shame that I've got and the regret, even though there's nothing I can do about it now. How much wasted energy we spend on past regrets and shame, even if I've been loved and forgiven since then. I shudder to think how much energy we all spend on something totally useless, but we get attracted back there again and again and get paralyzed by that shame that's taken us down, and it goes nowhere, you know. So that's a whole nother ball game, is the allowing that forgiveness in when it is given by another or by God or whoever. Let it in.
How do you make people, like, I've had people that have messed up, you know, at work and stuff like that, and they've come in, they've told me, you know, and I'm like, okay, it's no problem, and then they're still upset about it, and it still keeps going, and, you know, and I'm like, hold on a minute, I'm the boss, I told you, it is okay,
let it go,
and it's mysterious, because it's like, you won't get in trouble, you know, I respect you even more, because you actually came in and told me what happened. But it's like, wow, you really can't let it go. And then, okay, so is that about, you know, an emotional health issue or a previous incident, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, even the way you put that, like, I think it's really helpful to kind of be as abrasive as possible in some sense. Like you say, like I'm the boss. I said it's done. Now move on. I mean, there's a version of that that I sometimes do with retreats. Like there's a vision or a kind of little contemplation of the baptism of Jesus and then our own baptism. Like, we are humble sinners and we're down there in the river. We get baptized there with Jesus. And then the Father says, you are my beloved daughter. You are my beloved son. And you, I'm well pleased. That's a fact of what God says to us, right? Mm-hmm. In that, again, in that Christian imagination of things. God calls us his beloved, period. We are the ones that say, well, I wish that were true, but I don't really feel like that. And I remember I did that terrible stuff back then, or I'm going to really get my act together and be perfect from here on so that I can be beloved. Mm-hmm. And we start talking to ourselves instead. And then we get in this cycle of we're not letting it in. And so, like, an abrasive way to put that is it doesn't matter what you think about yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really doesn't matter what you think. It only matters what God thinks and what God says. Right. In that context, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Or you know, in a more,
I think you might be calling me
in God. in a more workplace. There's a distant analogy here.
But
you know what I mean? It's like to cut through that, like stop it.
Yeah.
Stop talking to yourself about it. Cut through it. Like it's done.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, that's what.
Trust and believe.
Now it's time to move on. Right. Like sometimes it needs to be.
Yeah.
You know, because there's something really weird about how we get stuck in those cycles of talking to ourselves and rehashing and berating ourselves. And that needs to be interrupted. Mm-hmm. Like, and sometimes.
Interrupt,
like,
is a good word.
Sometimes, like, that narrative has to be interrupted and then brought out into a different light, you know? So that's tough, though. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Now, how about receiving. receiving it, right? Receiving the apology, the forgiveness. When you're on that end of it, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, giving it, what it does for them. But what does forgiveness do for that person, right?
Here's where you need to read chapter one of that little booklet.
Oh, of the booklet. The booklet, which is called Forgiveness, Choosing to Receive and Give.
Yeah, thanks for the commercial there. Yeah, exactly. Wasn't trying to do that. But that's exactly what's addressed in there. So what does it do for the person to receive forgiveness? It commissions us to be better, I think, or to be truer about ourselves to ourselves. So one of the chapters in that little booklet is that exchange between Jesus and Peter on the beach after the resurrection. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the context of that, prior to that experience in the gospel, the last time Peter saw Jesus face to face was over the campfire when he had said an hour earlier, "Oh Lord, I'll never leave you. I'll never leave you. Even if everyone else leaves you, I will remain true." And then Jesus says, you know, "Before this night's over, you're going to deny me three times." Okay, so then we've got the rooster thing that happens. And Peter and Jesus seem to make eye contact after that denial. And then Peter is gone. Peter is not there for the crucifixion, the death, the burial. He is not present for that, according to the Gospels. So the very next time he encounters Jesus in the Gospel of John is this experience of the resurrected Jesus on the beach saying, "Peter, do you love me?" Mm-hmm. "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Feed my sheep." "Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Tend my flock." "Peter, do you love me?" And then Peter's like, "I already told you twice I love you." So why is that three-time question? Scholars say it's to counteract the three-time denial of Peter over the campfire. So after that, "Yes, Lord, I love you," the third time, Jesus says, "Feed my sheep." When you were a young man, you used to do what you wanted to do and go where you wanted to go. Now you will be taken in place to places that you would never go otherwise. Follow me. So I think even the worst of our denials, betrayals, acts of omission, commission, whatever you want to say, even the worst of them, when we receive the forgiveness from God or from another person, it commissions us to do something that is more true to who we really are and not who we wish we were or could have been or should have been. Mm-hmm. All those coulda, shoulda, didn'ts do nothing but bog us down, but they also keep us in a world where that's who I am. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I can receive forgiveness and see myself as you see me, as either worthy of a second chance or capable of being better, then receiving that forgiveness commissions me to be a more loving, more generous, more compassionate, truer, more honest person.
Wow. Yeah, it's a cool thing. I mean, the way you put that, that I'm commissioned after I've been forgiven. And I think there's something cool about that commissioning is not just a mandate or command that's given, although it does come through there, but it also just happens naturally, I think. You know, when I, if I genuinely let love in, forgiveness into my heart, and if I really let it in, I mean, it's you know, maybe it's something like, once my heart gets put back together, repaired on some level, even though still wounded, but still, once my heart's put back together, I just will love from there. I just will. It's kind of a natural flow then. You know what I mean? It's not just, I'm not just being told to go love other people. When my heart's intact, I just do love. I just am better in relationships. You know what I mean? Like there's something kind of cool about that being just a natural flow. You know, if I've been given something, forgiveness especially, how could I not just start to be more loving to other people. I mean, it's cool the way those plays out in the Gospels, all those different scenes of people being healed or forgiven immediately, not because Jesus always tells them to do it. They just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like like let's say the adulterous woman or the woman at the, or the woman at the well. The woman at the well is like, after this whole big thing and all of her shame's been laid out there in the light and she's still been loved right there, she just goes right back to the place where everybody has been looking down on her, mm-hmm. and she says, "You have got to meet this guy. He knows everything, and he still loved me. Now, you come meet this guy."
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's got like a new confidence and everything, and she's actually caring about these other people back in town, mm-hmm. saying, "You got to meet this guy." And it's just a natural flow. Like, she has new confidence.
To go forth.
Yeah.
She has
new
confidence, but it just everybody does that. Like, once they've been given it and they receive it, they just can't help but be more, live the life that they're made for, which is to be loving and relational.
Right.
You know, so
it provides a freedom and a fearlessness, I think.
Yeah.
Because if I know that you, whether you are God or whether you are somebody in my life, have seen me at what I consider my worst.
Right. That's good.
And you're still looking at me and still saying, come, you know, then that frees me to realize that love is real and I just gave you the worst that I have to give and you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't flinch.
Mm-hmm.
You're still here. There's a fearlessness too that comes with that, that, okay, now I'm not just okay in myself, I'm okay with you. And then, that is going to make that relationship stronger. I'm going to love you more. It's going to free me to love other people more. There's an amazing repercussion that goes to that. You know, it has the power to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to reiterate that that notion of receiving forgiveness and giving forgiveness is a choice. So I think that's what needs to keep coming back, is that it's not just an automatic, and if I'm a good person, I can do this well, or if I have this kind of a background, I can do that great, or if I meet the right person, this will be easy. It is a constant choice, constant.
That we're presented daily.
Yep.
Yeah, or the opportunity to make a choice on a daily basis.
And the more I make those choices, the easier they get. Right?
Exactly.
If I make habits of making those hard choices, then they become easier too, you know?
And then we don't fear it.
Right,
And avoid it.
Yeah, it's less of a big chasm to get over, you know? So.
Yeah.
Awesome, guys. Wow. So this is exactly what we were kind of hoping for with this, to have this topic of forgiveness, because there's so many different levels we get into, right, about how to do this, how to do that. Here's some easy steps, right? But sometimes it's about diving into some core values and core reasoning and why do we do the things that we do, and thought-provoking, you know, to have some thoughts provoked to explore who we are, you know. So we really talked about some great things today. I think starting with know thyself right off the bat, knowing yourself, and then the concept of forgiveness is a choice. It's a choice that we're presented with daily, either we're experiencing ourselves or even within the communities that we live, you know, what's our role in that. But ultimately it comes down to having, you know, I think also these boundaries as well too, that yes, we need to keep doing our best to forgive, but at the same time, it is about safety as well for us. And, you know, even the, I love the difference with forgiveness and reconciliation we kind of talked about as well too, and I think that would really help people somehow. I wish we'd have put that more towards the front of the podcast, because you never know if people are still listening. Raise your hand if you're listening. Yeah, do something. I'm waiting for the world to tilt when this is released, right? But just that concept of I think you can forgive from far away, but that reconciliation and that repairing that relationship, that's tough, and there's lots of steps in between all of those. So anyway, I know I'm kind of rambling, but I'm just so happy you guys were on with us today with Mental Health Matters, you know, and you know, the tie-in to, and people are like, what are you talking about forgiveness on mental health? Well, we all have mental health, and this impacts our mental health on a daily basis, our emotional health, you know, and it kind of goes without saying, but just to really focus on that as well, too, because how often do we hold on, somebody did us wrong, right? You know, going back to the first thing we talked about, the example of the car, right? And we hold that, and it just makes the rest of our day we're taking it out on other people, you know, and all those things.
Yep.
Anyway, Father Chris, Sister Virginia, any parting words of wisdom?
I see you're thought provoked. You got everything I have to give there.
Well, you know, when we were talking about doing this podcast of forgiveness, that Don Henley song just was in my mind. I thought maybe we could close with a song. No? No.
Everybody know.
Yeah, exactly. Forgiveness. Oh, see, there you go. No,
I'm not going to do it.
All right. Well, this has been Mental Health Matters. Tom Duff, St. Louis Counseling. Check us out, stlouiscounseling.org, and we'll see you next time.
This has been Mental Health Matters with Tom Duff of St. Louis Counseling Services. Check out stlouiscounseling.org for more information.